guys, welcome back to Uncommon Faith. I'm Amber.
And I'm Ashley.
And today with us, we have Brisa Alfaro. So excited for this one. She is a pawn stroke survivor that resulted in what's called locked-in syndrome. Left with a less than 1% chance of recovery, she refused and fought to not let this be the end of her journey in life. Overcoming seemingly impossible odds, she has now made it her mission in life to help others who also feel locked in their circumstances. Hi, Brisa. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me.
How are you?
Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing great. I'm doing better now that I'm with you ladies.
Yes, we love it. All right, girl, we want to hear all about it. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your story?
Yeah, well, before I tell you what happened to me, you have to know kind of who I was before. So similar to you, I was in the beauty industry and I did hair, makeup, and nails, and I would travel all over. I loved my industry. For a while, I was living in LA, traveling to New York, and then I started loving New York, and I moved to New York, and then I would travel back to LA often, and then I started missing my family. So I moved back to LA, and then I would just start traveling to hair shows, and I was working on, I did the most that I could do in my industry. So I worked New York Fashion Week. I did celebrity makeup and nails, and I did it all. I loved it. And that's what brought me back to New York. I was there for a hair show. I was going to be teaching the next day on stage. And I never made it to the hair show. I found myself in a New York City hospital, faced with a less than 1% chance to survive. So, as you know, most people that have strokes, it affects a certain side of their body. But in my case, it affected both sides because I developed something called locked-in syndrome. So I had a stroke in my pons. And pons is like basically the main highway, your brain stem going into your brain. And I didn't know that I had suffered from locked-in syndrome. I had to figure that out the hard way. So while I was in the hospital, by the grace of God, I was in the hospital for symptoms that were unrelated to my stroke. I just happened to have my stroke at the hospital because I was supposed to be on stage the next day. So I was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm having allergies. Can you guys fix this? And I was like, my face was swollen. It was unrelated to my stroke.
Wow.
But I was in the hospital at the right place, at the right time. So I had my stroke there and I didn't understand, what was really going on. I mean, I was laying in the hospital bed. I felt fine. I didn't feel like I had a stroke or there was anything really wrong. As a matter of fact, there was a kid that came in the emergency room that was, had an accident and you could tell he was physically damaged, like, you know, hurt. And a few doctors, you know, they came to rush to help him, but there was still doctors working on me and they were talking about me and they were saying, you know, is she allergic to anything? Does she have, you know, her family here? They were just talking about me, but nobody was talking to me. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand why is no one listening to me because I was talking back to them and it was acknowledging me. And so I'm getting kind of frustrated because everybody is talking about me and I'm clearly realizing that they're still working on me. I'm like, what's going on? Like, and I'm asking them, nobody's responding to me. Well, I woke up a few days later in the hospital. I was in critical care and I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't really know that nobody could hear me. I was speaking to all of them. I was talking to my doctors. I was talking to my nurses. Nobody was ignoring me. I just wasn't speaking. I thought I was. And that was the first kind of moment that I realized that I am locked in my body. No, there is no communication. Things were coming in, but I couldn't express that they were coming in. So it was very similar to stories you hear of people in comas, where they could hear everything around them, but they can't express anything. So I was very confused in the first few days. Then later I started realizing, I started hearing from other doctors, and they called my family from California to come pretty much say goodbye to their daughter. My mom and dad, my brothers, everybody, one by one, everyone started showing up. And I was very confused because the mood was at first very somber, but I felt fine. I kind of knew I was going to be okay. And I kept believing that I was going to be okay. I had complete faith that I was going to be okay. And they would come in, and it was a shock to them that I was laying in that hospital bed unresponsive. It was frustrating for me because I wanted to show them a sign that I was still alive and well in my body. And I just need to show them a sign that I'm not giving up. I'm working for it. And it was how many times do we go through that in life where we're trying and trying and trying to make something happen, and we don't have, there's no physical signs of us moving forward and progressing, but inside we're really trying. And so that's kind of what I was going through. It was scary, but you know, my mom did something for me. I mean, she would always play music for me. She would talk to me. She would guide me in like positive directions. And one thing she did for me was play an audiobook. She played lots of audiobooks, but this one audiobook that really resonated with me while I was in this locked in state, while I was facing a less than 1% chance to recover. I mean, the odds were against me. There's less than 5 cases per year worldwide that have survived and thrived after having this stroke. So if I paid attention to those odds, I may still be in that position, or if not worse, not be here. But I believe that it was a series of things that got me to where I am now. And one of those things, when my mom was playing the audiobook of The Secret, I don't know if you've heard of The Secret. The Secret focuses on the law of attraction, and what you focus on grows. Well, thoughts were all I had. I wasn't moving. I was laying in a hospital bed with a less than 1% chance. The odds were not in my favor. So if I have to, all I have to do is clean up my thoughts, then that's what I'm going to do. So I cleaned up my thoughts and I stopped thinking about what if scenarios. I stopped thinking about what if I stay like this forever? What if I don't make it? What if? I stopped thinking about the bad what if. And I started completely having faith that I will be okay, and I will show my family a sign that I am alive and well in my body, and I am trying. And that first sign, I was laying in the bed. My mom noticed I was moving a little bit, and she was like, "Do that again." And I showed her a sign again. I was able to flicker my pinky, and she saw that, and she was so excited. She ran to tell the doctors, "My daughter's moving." She's moving on command. She's moving. We just keep asking her, and she's moving her pinky. And the doctors, they disregarded her excitement. And they basically told her, I know you want to believe that she's moving, but those movements are involuntary. And again, going back to our lives, like what we're going through, how many times does that happen? Well, we try and try and try, and nobody notices the effort that we're putting in making a difference. No one notices. I mean, you guys probably went through it just starting this podcast. Are people even listening? Do people even care? Should we keep doing this? Yes, you should. Keep going. Keep trying, because eventually doors are going to open up for you. Eventually doors will not only open up for you, but it will be like a flood. And that's kind of what happened to me. Right. Like, I realized that my mom is noticing, my family is noticing that I am still alive and well in my body, and I'm trying to make it out of this locked in state. So I didn't give up. My doctors came in and they said, okay, Brisa, your mother says you're moving. Show us a sign that you're moving. Well, in that instance, it was very hard for me, because I had just been trying and trying for so long and showing my family a sign that I was still in my body. But now I have my doctors who's in front of me now, and I need to show them a sign. Well, I was tired. I was tired, and I didn't know how I was going to gain enough energy to be able to show them a sign that I was still in my body. But I then gathered enough energy, enough prayers, enough everything I had inside of me to show them a sign. And I imagine it was like an energy beam coming from my brain through my brainstem, kind of stalling at my brainstem, because that's where my stroke happened. In some way, I just needed a little crack. I just finally went through that barricade, and it made it down my arm, all the way down to my hand. And it just, again, started stalling like a computer screen when you're like trying to hurry up and get on your computer, and it's just stalling, stalling. Well, that's how I felt. And I think you just have to have a little bit more patience and belief in yourself. And I finally was able to do it. I was finally able to show my doctors, my family, the nurses, everybody, the sign that they were all looking for. And I finally was able to flicker my pinky. That pinky move was the beginning of my recovery. That was the first sign that they noticed that I was still in my body. The doctors gave me a chance to finally finish the rest of my recovery. So now it stopped being from a state of saying goodbye to Brisa. It turned out to be something like, okay, she's recovering now. And I used that pinky move to use that energy from flickering my pinky. I just had to do that over and over and over again. That same energy I used to move the rest of my arm. Little by little, I was able to move my arm. Later, I was able to move my leg. I was able to move the right side of my body. I used that pinky move to move the left side. And that was months and months later, I was able to recover the left side. I was able to sit up in a wheelchair, walk with a walker, walk with a cane, later walk unassisted. But all of that happened through a series of pinky moves. All of that happened because I celebrated every little tiny thing that I did. So instead of looking at the glass empty, like, I'm not going to be able to do this, all these things. I had plans, right? I wanted to do all these things, but all of a sudden I couldn't do it anymore. But you know what? I had to celebrate what I could do. And that's what I did. I celebrated the little micro moves in the direction of my goals that ultimately led me to massive success. And that's what a pinky move is. moves compounded will do miraculous things. And I believe that anything is possible when you believe, when you have complete faith, when you love abundantly. I stopped kind of being down on myself for not being able to do X, Y, Z. And I started falling in love with recovery. I fell in love with what else I could do. So right now I can do this. Maybe I can't do that, but I could do this right now. And I'm going to love it. And I'm going to celebrate it. And I'm going to receive more of it. Because when you do love what you're doing, you're loving it abundantly. Like, it's something that you're so thankful for. You live in complete gratitude for. But we have to be in complete gratitude. And I think that's what was the key to my recovery, was love and gratitude.
That's awesome. It's so crazy to me that yours is all about the pinky moving. And I don't know if you know, but my left arm is still paralyzed. And every day I will look down at my hand and just look at my thumb. Like, if only my thumb moves. If my thumb can move, then I know I can get the rest to go.
Yep. That's exactly how I did my whole recovery. Just piece by piece, bit by bit. I think a lot of us focus on the end goal too. Like, right. And that's great. You can do that. And that's going to help you get to where you need to go, because visualization is so important. We need to be able to see ourselves crossing the finish line. But also, if you're climbing a mountain, you have to look, you have to like keep your eye in front of you. Like, what is directly in front of you? Because you don't want to fall. And I think a lot of times we just are going through life thinking, I need to get to the top. I need to get to the top of the mountain. But what about right here, right now? You need to take a couple steps. That's what you need to do. Yes, you're going to get to the top of the mountain, but you can't get there without focusing on your baby steps, your pinky moves, putting one foot in front of the other and celebrating the fact that you're doing that. I mean, if you want to get to the top of the mountain, you got to celebrate how far you're getting every single time you try. And I think we don't do that enough. I think we are constantly in battle with ourselves, trying to tell ourselves, you know, yeah, that's okay. That's good. But this is where I really wanted. That's where I wanted to go. This is what I should accomplish. I think that we need to stop doing that and start celebrating our little pinky moves, our micro wins, because that will lead you to your bigger goals. I mean, had I given up because I was still in my hospital bed, or even just in my wheelchair, just given up and just said, oh, this is good as it's going to get for me. Well, you know what? You're right. Whatever you believe in, you're right. So if you think that this is as good as it's going to get for you, you're right. If you believe that there is more out there for you, that you can recover more, that you deserve to have more, you are also right. You have to believe it though. And I'm not talking about just like talking positive and like believing, you know, to a degree. I'm talking about completely embody that. Like, you are that. You are like, my doctors would always tell me, Risa, you're doing amazing. I'd be in a wheelchair and I'd say, doc, when am I going to walk again? You have no idea, Brisa. This right here, what you're doing is incredible. You should not even be sitting up in this wheelchair, but you are. You should be happy with what you got. Oh, trust and believe, I'm happy. I'm happy that I've got what I've got, but I want more. And there's no reason that I shouldn't want more. I want more, and I'm going to celebrate the fact that every time I gain more, I'm celebrating the fact that I am attracting it myself. And because we are the ones that create our own reality. And I had to realize that nobody else is going to play this game for me. This is up to me. Yes, I'm going to have cheerleaders. I'm going to have people in the stands. You know, they're all going to be rooting me on. But at the end of the day, right, I'm the one playing the game. So I'm going to miss 100% of the shots that I do not take. So if I say, that's going to be too hard, that's too hard, I don't want to do that, I might fall, or I will 100% not make that shot because I didn't try. But if I try, I might fail and I might not. I like those odds better.
Right.
So that's what I just keep doing in life. Even doing podcasts and standing on stages and speaking, even writing a book, all those things. I mean, never thought that that was possible for me. I never thought that I could be standing on stages with people without a brain injury, without any disability. They're up there just completely capable, able of making an impact. How can I think that I can do that? And what I'm saying is, like, I did think that that's something for me, right? At first I was thinking that. And then I started thinking, you know what? It is for me. I can do that too. Maybe I won't do it to the degree that they do it. Maybe I'll be like you will come on here. And I love that you guys were saying in your podcast, you guys focus on being real and authentic. And the way it comes out is the way it comes out. And I think that's beautiful because so many people are too busy polishing up life. I mean, just look at people's Instagram. They polish up their life. So then it's other people's perception of this reality. They think that that is reality. No, that's just their happy moments. All of us are guilty of that. Of course, I'm not going to be posting, right, you know, all of the difficulties that I go through. I want to celebrate all the good things that I'm doing. So if you look at my Instagram or other people's Instagram, they're celebrating what they're doing right. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But we also have to pay attention to what we're doing. We have to celebrate when something is difficult for us and we didn't actually hit the mark. Instead of being hard on ourselves, instead of saying, well, you didn't do this at the time frame that you wanted to do it, you know, I think you should celebrate yourself. And I think as women, we have a hard time with that because, I mean, you could tell any woman that is dressed up beautiful, her makeup's done, she's out, and you tell her, wow, you look beautiful. In a split second, their mind goes to, oh, I've got this, you know, long time ago, it's old, or, oh, my hair is not the way I wanted it to come out. Immediately, they go to the negative.
Tearing themselves down.
Because it's hard. Yeah, it's hard to, like, celebrate themselves. I think we need to start celebrating ourselves more. When we start realizing that celebrating ourselves will help us move forward in life, I think we may do that more because we do it with children, right? You see, a kid, when a child is learning how to walk, they will fall 100 times. And every time they get up, what do? Yay! We're so excited. They got up. Why don't we do that to adults? When we see them fall, when we see ourselves fall and we get back up, why don't we celebrate ourselves? Why don't we get so excited and just do it? A baby doesn't know. There's never been a baby that has decided this walking stuff is not for me. I'm just not getting it. I'm probably going to crawl for the rest of my life. No, everybody walks, right? Doesn't matter how many times they fall. They get up. So no matter how many times things happen to us in life, like you having another stroke and having to relearn everything all over again, that was not what you had, you know, envisioned in your future. That's not what you had planned. But what matters is that you get back up. Everybody's watching you now. Everybody's watching to see how you're going to respond to this. Right. You're not giving up. And as a result of that, people around us that are going through life in general, like just daily things, and they think they want to throw in the towel, they won't, because they see you. They see you girls doing it anyways. You do it anyways. And that alone is inspiring. That's a beautiful pinky move. Every day that you guys do this are pinky moves.
Wow, Brisa, I love how positive you are. This is amazing.
Thank you.
But I do have to ask, I know we're on the positive side of it. What was the hardest part of all of this for you?
The hardest part? That's a good question. I never really focused on that.
It's a good thing that you never focused on it.
Yeah. I mean, physically speaking, it was hard. It was all right. Hard. I think the hardest, physically speaking, was the original sign that I had to show my family that I was still in my body. Right. That I think took a lot out of me, physically speaking. I think right now, I think what is the hardest thing for me to deal with is dealing with invisible deficits. So I look like nothing ever happened to me.
Right.
Other than the fact that I was trached and you can see the scar on my neck.
Right.
But other than that, I mean, you can't really tell. I don't walk with a limp anymore. I physically recovered completely. So,
how long ago was your stroke?
7 years ago.
Wow. You're doing great, yeah. Girl. That's amazing.
Thank you.
What was your time span of how long were you in the locked in state? And then how long were you in the actual recovery?
So I was completely locked in for about 2 weeks. And then I started to unlock certain parts of my body, little by little. And I believe anybody that has a stroke is locked in to some degree, but that doesn't mean that you can't find the key. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that you're going to be locked in there forever. I mean, if you want it bad enough, there's ways that you can live happy and abundantly and just never give up. I mean, I have friends that are still in the locked in state where they're not able to speak or walk or anything like that, but they're in wheelchairs and they're still doing podcasts and they're able to put their story out there. So, I mean, if you look at the Paralympics, they didn't let their handicap stop them. They're champions.
Right.
I mean, they're world champions. And you could look at someone with a handicap or a disability and think, oh, that's as good as it gets for them, but it's not. That's up to you.
So my next question for you is, and I'm asking you this because it is also my career, did you go back to doing hair and makeup?
I did for a short time. I did. I realized, well, you would understand this because the hair industry, there is a lot of numbers, and I didn't realize that. I'm affected by numbers, so I don't really understand. Like, I don't know what year we're currently living in. My fiance Jason is always worried about me paying with cash because I go a little overboard because I don't understand the concept of dollars and money. So I'm just like throwing things in the basket. I'm like, oh, I'll take that. And he's like, you do realize how much that was, right? Taking things out. So wait, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
Just the career.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
In doing hair.
So I didn't realize how much numbers were in the beauty industry. So when you are doing hair color, you have to formulate. And I was not well with that. I didn't know what the number that I was using, like the formulas I was using. I didn't know what developers I should use. I didn't know how much time I should be with the client having, you know, process hair color and all that stuff. I didn't know how much ounces of product. I didn't know even on the scale of 1 through 10, you know, whatever color being the darkest and whatever color being the lightest, like there is a scale of which the hair color lives in. And I didn't know that anymore. So all those things I had to figure out on my own. So I did go back to the beauty industry. I tried, but I realized that was not really my passion anymore. And I realized while people would ask me about my story, I would kind of light up. And I honestly loved getting the feedback that I was getting. At first, it kind of scared me. Like I would go to like the makeup counter, like I'd go to the MAC counter and buy makeup, you know, and the girl behind the counter would ask me, what's that scar on your neck? What happened? If you don't mind me asking. And then I would tell her a very short rundown version of my story, just a little clip, but it's exactly what she needed to hear. And all of a sudden I would have,
that's where you were finding your joy.
And I would realize like, I'm just telling a little portion of my story and it's exactly what she needed to hear, to the point where she'd be crying. I would have random people ask me about what happened to me from my scar, or they heard or whatever. And I would share little bits and pieces of my story and they would cry and they would say to me, you have no idea how much I needed to hear this. I really needed to hear those words right now. And I thought, you did? Wow. Like, I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And it took that point of my recovery to just keep telling my story. And it was not only healing for me, it was also healing for other people. And I realized like, okay, I think that's my calling. I think that's the reason that God gave me a second chance at life. I think I'm supposed to be here for a reason, to be sharing with people to not give up and to realize that they do need to celebrate small moves for big results. That's what Pinky Moves is all about. And I think we don't do that enough. And I think that that was the reason that I came back here. And I keep doing that. I keep sharing. That's why I said yes to you guys, because I want to.
I love that you found your journey through your recovery. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a blessing. It's definitely healing. It's been a healing journey.
Awesome, because it's something that you continue to heal from.
Yeah.
Did it take you years to get from like wheelchair to being able to like look, you know, be back to normal?
Years. I didn't start driving, I think, until year 4. I mean, everybody recovers differently, right? Everybody, it's not a one size fits all. Everyone recovers differently. So I was in the middle of my recovery while I was still coaching people, like how I recovered. And sharing my journey. And I would get people tell me, well, I can't do X, Y, Z yet. You know, you recovered so great and I still can't do X, Y, Z. Well, and I'm on year, you know, two or whatever. And I would say, I couldn't even do that at year two. Everyone is different. Everyone recovers differently. So the fact that, I mean, I started driving at year four. I started walking. I don't even know. I didn't keep a timeline of my recovery. All I knew was I needed to recover. And I think that helped me the most is what helps me the most was not worrying about why this happened to me anymore, because I was kind of hung up on that for a while. Like, why did this happen? Why did this happen? I need to know why. Yeah. And I wanted answers. And when I let that go and I realized that this is the reason why, I started healing way more. I started realizing, like, I'm using my healing for good. And I'm helping other people through my own healing. And I didn't realize that that was the calling that God placed on me, in me. So as I'm doing that, I'm healing more, you know, I'm sharing more, I'm connecting with more people, and I'm healing more. So I can't give you a complete timeline of when all those things started happening for me, because it honestly was, I can't even give you a date. One, because I'm not good with numbers. And two, because I never really paid attention to it. I just knew, like I knew, like I knew, like I knew, I was going to be okay. Nothing could tell me otherwise. I was going to be okay. And I think if, as long as you're going through anything in life, whatever you're going through, just know you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay. Yes, it sucks right now, but I think this is one thing that I talk to my clients about and I speak about when I'm on stages or wherever I'm speaking. I always talk about pause and play. And I think it's important that we practice this. So many times we're going to get these negative thoughts that are going to come up. And that's natural. And I don't think we need to completely say, like, I don't believe in negative thoughts, because that's not true. Negative thoughts are always going to come up and around, you know, they're just going to flood us sometimes. But it's also a possibility that you can do this. Push pause. I push pause on the negative self-talk that comes up in my mind. That's going to happen. And I push pause on that and I press play on what I want to hear and what I want to see in my life. What I want is X, Y, Z. So that's what I'm going to focus on. I'm not going to focus on what I can't do. And I think so many times we do that in life. We start to think of the negative. What if this happens? What if that happens? We start to think of all these things. And because of that, we're attracting it. And if we just stop thinking about those things and start playing the movie that we want to see play out in our life, we start playing that all the time. Press pause on that negative movie that keeps popping up. Okay, I see you. I hear you. Great. Okay, but I'm going to pause you for a minute and I'm going to play what I want to see. And I guess that's what I've done in my whole recovery and in life and, like, just in general. I think that's something that has helped me through anxiety, depression, nerves when I'm about to go on stage and I'm, like, you know, getting nervous and thinking I'm going to mess up, I'm going to fall, I'm going to trip, and I'm going to all these things. I press pause and press play on what I want to see. I have a doctor's appointment. I've had 7 surgeries on my airways because the scar tissue has blocked my airway to keep me from breathing. So every time the scar tissue grows back, they have to cut out the scar tissue. and so I could breathe again. This is very dangerous surgery. I mean, it's my only airways. So you can't have a bad day, doc. Like, you got to get it right, right? So I don't focus on the bad. I focus on the good. What's good that's going to come out of it? I'm going to be able to breathe again. I'm going to be able to speak again. I'm going to be able to project my voice. I'm, instead of thinking, what if they mess up? I'm never going to be able to talk again. I'm not going to think about that. I'm going to push pause on that. Those thoughts come up. I give it the time, but I don't give it my day. Because there's so much more of my day that I need to enjoy. I mean, you guys have kids, right? Why are you going to let that bad moment ruin anything? I mean, your kid can come up to you and talk to you about something beautiful, but you're too busy focused on this negativity and you're going to stay there when you could be missing out on all of this beautiful, you know, life that God has given you. You're too busy focused on this negative. So it's easier for me to press pause on that. I hear you. I see you. Okay, great. I'll pause you. And I'm just going to enjoy the rest of my day. So bad things happen. That's fine. I'm going to press pause. And that's what I just keep doing in life.
I love that. I'm going to start telling you that, Ashley. When we have our heart to hearts, I'm going to tell you, just press pause, okay? I like that. Press pause.
Press pause, Ashley. Press pause.
I'm curious, did you seek out like support groups after your stroke to find other survivors?
I did. And I realized a lot of things during that time because there wasn't a lot of young stroke survivors that I could find. I was 32 when it happened. And when most people are, at that age, they're kind of figuring, like, they're settling down in life and like they're getting married and having babies and all that stuff. I was recovering. So I kind of missed those years. And I was looking to connect with more people that way. So I joined a lot of support groups. And the common theme was, well, you're young. You'll be fine. You're young. And I was like, no, that's not what I wanted to hear. I'm looking for support. And then I realized like it was a sounding board. It was just a sounding board of all the ailments that they have, of all of the negativity that's going on in their life, on how difficult everything is. And it was constant. And I realized I need to get out of this. So I think that support groups are important. However, I also think that you need to be your own support group. And I realized that I needed that. I needed to be my own positive support group because misery loves company. And I realized that a lot of those, not all of them, a lot of those support groups were very negative, and they were always talking about focusing on the bad. And I was over here in this like happy little bubble, like I'm going to be fine. And then I'm telling all these people, you know, focus on the positive, guys. And they're like, oh, easy for you to say. So I realized like I need to protect my energy. And little by little, I started easing my way out. And I realized like, I need to be my own support. I need to be here for myself and I need to stop looking for it from other people. I think that when we do that, we become disappointed. When we put too much on other people's like hands, we disappoint ourselves because we're constantly like, well, they should be this way. But they're not this way. So we get disappointed because they're not that way. Well, instead of getting disappointed, take yourself out of that situation and realize that they are that way and that works for them, and that's great. But this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to focus on the positive. So I'm going to be over here in my happy little bubble, and I'm just going to talk to the people that encourage me and fulfill me. And I started hanging around other people that were also like-minded, and whether it be friends, family, support groups that are positive support groups that had nothing to do with stroke recovery, but people that were also in the same direction that I was going in. I wanted to protect my energy, and I knew that they were putting out the energy that I was looking for. And so that's what I kind of gravitated to. So, yeah.
So it's kind of like the best of both worlds. Like, you were able to meet other survivors, and then you're like, okay, now I want to focus more on the positivity and not stay in this rut of woe is me.
Yeah. Right. Well, it was hard for me because I am such a positive person, and I felt like that's what helped me in my recovery, because every time people would try to get me to look at the bad, I would revert back to the good, like constantly. But what about this? What about this? I would just go back to the good. Well, doing that often is exhausting. Yeah. And like constantly battling it with someone else, it's exhausting. It's hard enough to do it ourselves for ourselves. But then when we're constantly trying to battle someone else's energy, other people's energy, I realized I needed to protect mine. So I, every once in a while, would pop in and I would give some encouraging words, and then I would pop out, and that's it. That's all I would do. I just kept doing that over and over. I stopped checking how people would respond to me, because when I'd get disappointed, and I would think, well, that's not the purpose of my post. That's not the purpose of what I was trying to say. Like, no, you took it wrong. No, that's not how I meant it. I realized that that was draining my energy. So I just focused on the positive, and I would say the positive things that I wanted to say, and then I would jump out. I would jump out because some people, it's for some people, it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay. I think it's when we are constantly trying to get people to jump on our side and realize it's so much better here, guys. It's so much happier. There's so much more bliss here. Like, I think that's what gets exhausting. I think trying to convince other people to live in this happy state that we're living in, I think that's what becomes frustrating when we realize that not everybody's ready and they're going to come on their own time. And our job is to inspire and to leave them with hopeful nuggets that hopefully they'll pick up and be able to use it in their own life and shine their own light and come to the, you know, brighter side of life, right? I think it's their responsibility to do that. It's our responsibility to leave it there, but we can't pick it up for them and open it for them. It's like a gift, right?
Right.
We have this gift. All of us do. We have this gift, and we can give you the gift, but it's your job to open it up, unwrap it, and keep it. A gift is only a gift when they unwrap it and keep it. Otherwise, it's just a package sitting there. So I realized that that's my job. I'm going to leave you with a gift. You can open it when you're ready.
I love that you own that you're a positive person. Most people won't say that about themselves, and I love that.
Thank you. I believe that I owe my whole recovery to having a positive attitude and completely knowing without a shadow of a doubt that I will be okay no matter what. And I think when you release the fear of, and the what ifs, when you release that and you just know, like, you know, that you will be okay, and you use all the tools like visualization, and you stop being a victim, I think that's when beautiful things happen. I think it's that mindset, right? When you are in the victim mentality, it's victim versus victor mentality, right? You can either play the victim card or you can play, you know, the victor card. I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be fine. No matter what, I will be okay. No matter what, I will be okay. But you said it before, Amber, in your podcast, you said you were ready to be called home. You were okay with that, but God had a different plan for you, and you're okay with that too.
I am. And I think that for me was one of the hardest things that I dealt with after my first stroke, was not understanding why I was still here. Why did he save me? Why did he keep me here? What is my purpose? And I feel like that's important for people to know that have gone through something that is life altering, like what we have gone through, is that there is a purpose. We may not see it now, but that there is one.
Yep, there is a purpose. All of us have a purpose. And I think that's our reason for being here, is to find that purpose. And I believe you guys are on the right path, and you're on a beautiful healing journey and helping so many people. I mean, I just listened to a few of your podcasts and I was like, wow, these girls have the right message. You guys are, both of you are so inspiring. And I mean, to the smallest thing and the biggest thing, I mean, I think people need to hear your voices and be able to see that anything is possible. I mean, with a hope and a dream. And for so long, I'll tell you guys, I've been thinking, I think 3 years ago, I talked about, maybe I should start a podcast. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, well, who am I? Just the same way that everybody goes through that, right? Like in recovery, well, who am I to recover completely? Who am I to recover to the degree that I want to recover? Why me? Why? How come? Well, the same way I was thinking in the podcast, like, what makes me think that I could do a podcast with short-term memory, with the inability to understand numbers, with the inability to, my cognitive thinking is all messed up. I mean, I'd be in the middle of talking and be like, wait, what was I saying? Like, who am I to think that I could do that?
It happens to me, and I haven't had a stroke.
Right? And that's what I'm saying. Like, why not? Yeah. Why not? I do it on stage. I'll be speaking on stage and I'll be like, wait, 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 what was I saying? And you know what? Everybody's cool with it. I didn't die. I didn't, you know, get fall or anything. It was just, fine. Everybody's fine. They're like, oh, I got you, girl. And they'll tell me where I was and I'm good.
Yeah.
And we haven't known you very long, maybe an hour. And I just love how positive you are. And just the fact that you talked about a podcast, it's like, okay, I could see you having your own podcast about positivity. And I think you would kill it, girl.
Oh, thank you.
You're thank so you. Welcome.
I appreciate that. I received that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of positivity, tell us a little bit about your book.
So my book, Limitless, first of all, that was something that, gosh, I never thought that I would be an author, let alone the number one best-selling, international number one best-selling author.
So that, amazing.
That dream, thank you. That was something that I thought, you know, other people, that's for other people, not for me. I mean, I didn't know that I could do something like that. But that's just an example of, you can do anything you put your mind to. I mean, I didn't all of a sudden become that. I had to do that through a series of pinky moves. So it took me a while to write it. And it's not a very big book, but it did. It made an impact, I guess, some way or another, right? Mm-hmm. So I just kind of bundled up my pinky moves and all of my story, you know, I put it together. Mm-hmm. And I did what I had to do to finish my book. And I did, and I released it and just put my hands in the air and said, okay, God, like, let's see what happens. And that's what happened. So I became international number one best-selling author. I've been able to help and be on podcasts as a result of it all over the world. And I had no idea that my little story would impact people. I mean, I get messages from like India, Korea, the UK, like all over the place, people that have read my book, people that have been inspired by my journey. And I first did it for my own healing purposes, for my own, like, I just wanted to tell my story and put it out there on paper and be done with it. But then I realized, like, no, there's more that's going into that. So eventually I'll probably write another one. But as of right now, mm-hmm. I have my book Limitless. You can get it on Amazon. My first and last name, Brisa Alfaro, Limitless. You'll find it. Paperback. Or
we'll put a link on the podcast. When yeah. We post this.
Yeah, we'll definitely link
and
it.
And then I just didn't know that my career would blossom to what it is now. I mean, I honestly never thought that I would ever be anything other than working in the beauty industry. That's just what I thought, that that's how my life was going to go. But you know, God had different plans for me. So here I am.
That's really amazing. I'm just excited because I feel like me and Amber have had these conversations in the last couple of months of, you know, her trying to figure out her purpose or her recovery right now. Like, it's always, hey, can you pray about this? The doctor said this. And I was like, but that's not what God said. So, you know.
Amen. That's so true. I mean, going back to what the doctor said to me every single time I would go back, they would tell me what I didn't want to hear. And I decided that is up to me and God. That is not up to you. I will take your advice. Okay. But at the end of the day, it's up to me. I'm playing the game. So when is enough going to be enough for you? Like, when are you right now, Amber, where you're physically at, like where you are in your recovery, is that enough for you?
No.
You want more. Absolutely. God placed that desire in you for a reason.
Right.
It's not for you to ignore. Right. It's for you to keep going. So I believe that as long as you've got that desire inside of you, there's hope.
Yep. I needed to hear that. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Breeze. Not just for being a guest, but for just kind of speaking truth into Amber today. Thank you. It makes me happy when she's happy.
Aw. Well, it makes me happy that you guys are happy. Thank you.
Do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on, like, the gram?
Yeah, you can follow me. You can follow all my social media. It's Brisa Alfaro on Instagram or Facebook is Brisa Alfaro. I think on Instagram is Brisa _Alfaro_. And you can go to my website, which is brisaalfaro.com. And you can find the links to my book. And I also, if you guys want a free gift, anybody wants a small free gift on pinkymoves.com, there's something there for you. So
awesome.
Yeah,
people
for
love
you
free
or
gift.
Any of your gifts. Yeah. Any of your guests can go there and check me out. And
awesome. We'll check it out.
This is Stroke Month, so Stroke Awareness Month. And I think it's important yes. to have these conversations because I think, like Amber and I, we always were going through life thinking that that's for other people. That would never happen to us. And it happened to us. So I think everybody should be aware and understand that it can happen to
them. Awesome. Where can we find you, Amber?
You guys can find me on Instagram at amber_n_g. Where can they find you at, Ash?
You guys are like the underscore twins.
Our brain needs that space. Pause.
Right?
G. Yes. Yes.
That's it.
You can find me at ashley.reed, and then you can find us both at Uncommon Faith Podcast on Instagram, as well as email us at uncommonfaithpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again, Brisa. We really appreciate having you.
All right, Brisa, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. Likewise, lady. It was a pleasure having me anytime. Love to be here.
Okay. Until next time, guys. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.